The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
It's a beautiful.
Aging works in different ways for everyone. It all starts from the inside. Welcome to Health and Beauty for Life with Dr. Tang and Alexandra. We'll show you how the latest breakthroughs in understanding how to balance and optimize your body, proper nutrition, and supplements work together to keep you looking young, losing weight, and feeling rejuvenated. Now, here's Dr. Tang and Alexandra. It's
Welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to the Health and Beauty for Life show. I'm Dr. Tang. It's a great day, and it's a great day to be sharing this information with you. I'm here with my co-host, Alexandra. I'm not hearing Alexandra right now for some reason. So I'm very excited. I'm very.
Hello?
Oh, okay. So we're having some technical difficulties once again. Are you there?
Can you hear me, Dr. Tang?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. What I was saying was that I'm always very excited to start our show and to end our show because of all the great feedback we are getting from our listeners and from our patients. And there was a lot of buzz about our last week's show in regards to the detoxification and liver cleansing. And I did wanted to bring up a couple of comments that patients or even questions that our listeners had for you. And that was, you know, some of them are on medications to treat a certain ailments. And they were wondering if taking medications affects the liver.
Yes, you know, certainly there's certain medications that have a direct effect, and there are medications that we have to check liver enzymes to make sure that there's no inflammation. For example, medications that have that treat cholesterol, diabetes are very common medications that are prescribed, and so they have to be followed. Pain medications as well have to be followed, and many different types, things that have Tylenol all have to be followed. So those are examples of medications that can directly affect the liver. However, from my standpoint, I think that all medications is a problem to a certain point, not even to a point where you have to be very, very careful with everything that you put into your mouth, because the bottom line is that all the medications, practically 99% of them, all are metabolized by the liver. And for every time that the body has to break down a medication, it is actually spending its own resources, its own time to detoxify this. And it will actually have less time to actually clear out some of the daily toxins that we talked about. So, you know, we counted an average 30 to 40 different toxins that we're exposed to on a daily basis. So every time you spend less time on these daily toxins is not a good thing, because there will be at some point an overburden on your liver. And that's when we really have problems. And these can manifest itself as different types of diagnoses and fatigue, et cetera, et cetera. So I believe that if you can try to limit the need of medications, it is all that important.
Now, is there something the listeners can do to check their liver, how well their liver is working for them?
There are and there are not. The typical blood tests that doctors normally check are something called the AST, ALT. These are basically things that are released when liver cells are damaged. And so obviously when there's more liver damage, these markers are actually elevated. So these are the normal things that we check. And so if you're within normal, people think that their livers are normal. However, there are other tests that I use in addition to that to look to see whether there is concern of liver detoxification problems. For instance, there's a test called the homocysteine. Homocysteine is a blood marker that I use quite often, and it basically reflects how your body is methylating, which is a process in which the liver is clearing out toxins. So if your liver is not doing its job, this number called the homocysteine will be elevated. And so I actually use it quite often. And what they've seen in the literature is that they feel that this marker, when elevated, can be actually a independent risk factor for heart disease and strokes. And so this is an important number to follow in the clinical picture of other blood tests. So I recommend people checking the homocysteine, and I use this and I follow this quite frequently, because there are things that you can do, for instance, taking folic acid, taking B12, B6. These vitamins are necessary, and if they're deficient, this marker can go up. So we can follow this test, and what you'll see is that people who have really high homocysteine levels, when they improve, they end up feeling better. And I do think that this is a good way to look at how the liver is doing.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate the answers to their questions. Now, today we're going to be talking about irritable bowel syndrome. And personally, I'm very excited about this topic because I have learned a lot going through myself and you diagnosing me. And I look forward to that.
Well, you know, I really wanted to talk about this because, and this is kind of the springboard to talk about how to improve your gut health, because I feel that how your health does is really dependent on how your gut does. So if your gut is not doing well, you are not going to do very well in terms of your health. And this goes for, I think, all patients. All patients need a very healthy gut. And so we do have a lot of patients who come in who, let's say, have fatigue and who have weight issues. They lose weight. They have sleep problems, and they have inflammation in the joints. And actually, this is actually related to how your gut's doing. Now, oftentimes, people will come and they will be diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. And the topic is actually, or the title of our talk today is irritable bowel syndrome ? And I put this as a question mark because I personally don't really believe in this plain diagnosis of irritable bowel syndrome. Irritable bowel syndrome, by definition, is sometimes called spastic colon. And basically, it is a syndrome that is based upon symptoms. And so when somebody has, let's say, chronic abdominal pain, discomfort, bloating, some type of alteration in bowel habits, what happens is that they are first tested for many other possibilities. So oftentimes, for instance, they might do an ultrasound, they might do a CT scan, they might do some stool tests. Now, if they don't find anything that they're concerned about, then they're labeled with this irritable bowel syndrome. And this is actually a very common problem. And apparently it affects, I would say, about 20% of the population. Now, in general, irritable bowel syndrome is found much more in females than males. And it's found more in the younger population than the older population. So younger females have it more commonly. Now, it is a very problematic diagnosis in the sense that many people come in every year to see the doctor. In fact, they estimate 3.6 million visits per year are based upon having this kind of chronic stomach pain. Now, in a primary care practice, it can make up at least 12% of all patients. And in a GI practice, which is a specialist in the gastrointestinal tract, it can make up 20% of the whole practice. So it is a very common, prominent entity. And the importance is that it has so much in terms of it causes a lot of limitations and effects on people's health. And there's a lot of loss of work based upon this. And people actually spend a lot of time and money spending, let's say, money on laxatives, sometimes spending what they estimate to be $1 billion a year. So I wanted to kind of talk about this. And also, this is for the people who actually are not even labeled as this. You know, there are even more people who have, I would say, tens of millions of more people who are not labeled with anything. They just have some bloating, some gas, let's say, some heartburn. And this is something that oftentimes people think it's totally normal. And so this is something that is, and I guess I wanted to say that this is something that we have to really have a better understanding of what irritable bowel is. Now, in my book, irritable bowel is really a diagnosis of exclusion. So people will be labeled this. And I would honestly say that doctors who see patients in a regular clinic, and if they see patients over and over with this problem, they start to kind of label these patients as being somebody who has some kind of psychiatric illness, because for doctors, on the doctor's end, standpoint, it really is a very frustrating problem. So many doctors do not know what to do with this. So when people come, they say, well, change your diet, take this medication, take this laxative, eat more fiber, and that's all they really do. But these patients never get better. And so these patients continue to have this problem, and oftentimes they will then get labeled as being depressed. And unfortunately, these patients end up getting fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and they end up being in the hospital oftentimes. Now, I wanted to talk something about the functions of the gut itself. And so there are many functions of the gut, and it's a really important organ. It is approximately 30 feet, and it is an organ that helps absorb nutrients and eliminate toxins. And it really forms what I consider a barrier to, and a protective barrier against different organisms, such as viruses, bacteria, and fungi. So it is a very important part of our health. So after the break, we're actually going to talk a little bit more about the reasons and the importance of the gut. And we're going to actually link it back to certain diagnoses that we can actually have a better understanding of what irritable bowel is, syndrome is. So we'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you living your vital life? One that is showcasing you at your full potential? There are many issues that stand in the way of most people achieving their full potential. We will discuss these issues and how to overcome them each week on The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential, with host Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. Living the vital life often requires that we trust our own intuitive voice and that we view illness or life challenges as calls to action to reconnect with the deeper urges of our spirit or soul. Tune in Fridays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Zoom Leadership.
It's the big picture issues of the day, up close and personal capabilities of leadership, and a desirable future of constant renewal.
Zoom Leadership.
It's the economic crisis made clear, patterns and perspectives of leadership, and the importance of changing the way we pursue our future. Join host John Schmidt every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time.
Zoom Leadership.
An inside look at what's really going on in business, government, and civil society. Tune in every week on the Voice America Business Channel.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus,
creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said,
"All at last returned to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth. Tune in Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on the Green Talk Network.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
It's a beautiful day.
You're listening to Health and Beauty for Life with Dr. Tang and Alexandra. If you have any questions or comments, please call into our program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to johntang at resuvemedical.com. That's J-O-H-N, Tang, at R-E-J-U-V-E medical.com. Now, back to this week's show.
It's a beautiful day.
Welcome back. We were talking actually about irritable bowel syndrome, question mark, and we were talking about how I felt that irritable bowel syndrome is really not a great diagnosis to actually label patients because there are so many different possibilities. Now, to understand this, we have to really understand the functions of the gut. And so what I was talking about is that we obviously understand that when we eat foods, we're going to absorb things, absorb nutrients. So obviously the first function is for absorption. And we can probably understand the idea that we are going to be eliminating things that we don't want in our bodies through the gut as well. Now, what we probably don't know is that the gut actually forms a very important barrier, and it's really a protective barrier against live organisms that actually go through our gut. So there's a lot of things we don't want to enter our bloodstream, and it serves as a function very similar to the skin. So there's a gut barrier that really prevents different bacterias, viruses and fungi to enter our body. The other thing that the gut does is that it is really the largest immune part of the system. There's a lot of cells called the IgA that the body makes, and that actually helps to protect us from many types of infections, particularly GI infections and respiratory infections. So it is a very important organism. Important organ to be thinking about. Now, to go back to the irritable bowel syndrome, this is very, very different for many, many patients. People have many different symptoms, so this is actually just a grab bag diagnosis, but you really have to think of it as being different entities, which basically also means that the way to treat this, so we first have to understand what is the underlying etiology. And each person will have a different set of treatments. So it's very important to understand that this is a very wide spectrum of different entities. Now, the things that I think about when people have stomach issues is first I think about something called dysbiosis. And dysbiosis is basically a condition where there is a alterations of our normal healthy gut flora. Apparently, in our gut, there's at least 500 to 1,000 different strains of bacteria in our body. They serve a very important function, and that is that it helps to actually break down our foods into smaller micronutrients so that we can better absorb this. So we do need a very delicate balance in order for this to occur. And so what happens is when you have dysbiosis is that there is a certain strain or many strains that overrun the other strains. And so this is a very unhealthy situation. And so this will obviously create an environment that inhibits our ability to absorb nutrients. And so this will cause, let's say, gas and bloating and upset stomach. Other things that people can have that are classified within irritable bowel syndrome is certain types of infections. Now, the type of infections that we're talking about in this particular talk is more of the chronic infections, not something that you would consider like a what we call a Montezuma's revenge or something that's a very, very acute that you would actually see if you ate something that was spoiled and you have acute diarrhea. That's not the type of infection we're talking about. We're talking about these subclinical infections that can have certain strains of bacteria. And because of this, you can have a syndrome such as irritable bowel syndrome. Other things that can be a problem is if you have motility problems, meaning that your stomach is very slow. So there are reasons for this, and that sometimes can be related to the foods we eat, medications, or some other medical problems. So if you have decreased motility, the bacteria is able to have more time in certain areas to digest more of it. And so this will actually cause more gas and more nausea and bloating as well. Other things that can happen are other types of infections, such as like a parasitic infections. Other problems could be when our pancreas is not making enough digestive enzymes. So we call this pancreatic insufficiency. And what that basically means is that we don't have enough enzymes to digest the food properly. So as the food goes through, it's not being digested and it gets into the colon, let's say, and these bacteria start to have a feast. And this is when you actually have a lot of gas as well and stomach pain. People sometimes will call this, lactose intolerant. And that is true if it's specific, for instance, to lactose. But obviously, there's other types of food particles that need enzymes, such as proteins, fats, carbohydrates. And if you're actually missing any of these other enzymes, it can cause a very similar situation. Other things is the stomach acid. You are not, for some reason, not making enough acid to actually start the initiation of digestion. This is most commonly seen in people who actually take proton pump inhibitors or H2 blockers. Basically, these are medications used for the purpose of decreasing stomach acid. So oftentimes people might get diagnosed with heartburn or reflux or GERD or gastritis. And in some situations, it's the irritation caused by too much acid, but sometimes actually it could be where you have too little acid, but the presentation is very similar. And so by actually taking a proton pump inhibitor, which is a medication, you actually are limiting the body's ability to use the acid in its natural way, which is basically to digest food, to start the initiation of digestion. And so without that, the food goes through and all these different bacteria start to really start to feast on this, and this can cause irritable bowel syndrome. So I'm using irritable bowel syndrome as just a way to have people understand, because this is how people understand things. But what we're going to try to say in the conclusion is that irritable bowel syndrome shouldn't be diagnosed in the sense that it should be labeled this way. We should actually talk about the individual problems. And by doing so, this is a much better way of understanding what's going on and obviously to treat this. And because if you understand what's going on, the treatment is going to be so much easier. Now, the one thing that I wanted to talk about in more detail, and we see this all the time in our clinic, is actually the food sensitivities. Now, this is something that some people might have heard something called celiac disease. And celiac disease is basically a diagnosis by what they use is endoscopies. And so what happens is that when you are allergic to a particular food, in this case, this is gluten, and we'll get into what gluten is, but when you're allergic to gluten, over a period of time, this actually causes a reaction. And this reaction causes inflammation to the villi, which are the little pouches that come from the intestines to help absorb nutrients. And what happens is, as these things become inflamed over time, they get atrophied. And atrophy means that they start to die. And so celiac disease is when you see basically the death of these villi in our intestines. And so celiac disease is only diagnosed by using endoscopy, by doing biopsies. And so oftentimes people who have this issue are diagnosed, but oftentimes it is missed, actually. It is missed because they do not have the right areas when they do biopsies. Or it could be where there's just inflammation, not quite atrophy, or there might be partial atrophy. So by definition, it is where it is complete atrophy of the stomach lining, and, or actually in the intestinal lining. And so there is another entity which is actually much more common, and this is something called non-celiac gluten hypersensitivity. And what that basically means is that there is a spectrum of disorders related to food sensitivities, and this causes a reaction in our guts. And this reaction is not a good reaction. It causes inflammation. And when we have inflammation in our gut, what happens is manifold. And what happens is that the inflammation first causes malabsorption, meaning that the ability to absorb nutrients is hindered because the inflammation or the swelling actually impedes the ability of the gut to absorb nutrients. That becomes a huge problem because if you don't have absorption of nutrients, you start to actually get many other diseases. So fatigue will be the first thing, but when you stop to absorb iron, for instance, you'll get iron deficiency. When you stop to absorb calcium, you start to get bone loss, for instance. If you stop to absorb magnesium, then your blood pressure starts to go up and your liver capabilities of detoxing actually goes down. So absorption is a huge, huge factor. The second thing that this entity causes is just general inflammation. General inflammation is a huge problem because this is actually the precursor to having heart disease and strokes or things such as metabolic syndrome. And this is something that it is very connected to our well-being. So this is another problem. The other issue is something called intestinal permeability, which basically means that the gut barrier that is the protection, the first line of protection, is broken down. And so our intestines become more permeable, meaning that these bugs such as bacteria and fungi can easily cross through this membrane, and it can go to our bloodstream, and it can cause future infections. And so this is a serious problem. So after the break, we're actually going to go over a case example and talk about this and how you can maybe identify this and what you can do for this. So stay tuned, please.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Tune into the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics. Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. The show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Cancer Support Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
Are you a real sports fan? Get ready to talk football and anything else sports with Kwame Lassiter. Formerly with the Arizona Cardinals, San Diego Chargers, and St. Louis Rams, Kwame's got the experience, so he's prepared to talk sports with you. Every week on Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk. It's on the Voice America Sports Network every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time. Get ready for unpredictable fun and sometimes a sarcastic look at the world of sports. That's Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk on the Voice America Sports Network.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
It's a beautiful day.
You're listening to Health and Beauty for Life with Dr. Tang and Alexandra. If you have any questions or comments, please call into our program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to John Tang at rejuvemedical.com. That's J-O-H-N Tang at rejuvemedical.com. Now, back to this week's show.
It's a beautiful day.
Thank you again for joining us. You're listening to the Health and Beauty for Life show. I am Dr. Tang. We are taking calls if you would like to call. Our phone number here is 1-866-472-5792, or you can send us an email at John Tang, that's one word, J-O-H-N-T-A-N-G, at rejuve, R-E-J-U-V-E, medical.com. We're talking about gut health, and I was talking about something called non-celiac gluten hypersensitivity. And the reason why we're talking about this is because we're actually seeing a lot of patients who have a lot of food sensitivities in our clinic, and this is causing a huge problem for their other medical conditions. One thing that I was mentioning was is that when you have something that irritates the stomach to a point, there is something that happens, and that's something called an immune response. And this is one of the scary things that could happen if you have this entity, because most patients are not knowing of this. And so what happens is that this immune reaction is at first a very innocent reaction, but over time what happens is that this immune reaction starts to be triggered, and sometimes there is a correction, not a correction, but it evolves into a certain type of immune antibody. And that antibody can then start to be so close to our organs. And so what happens is that your body starts to attack itself. And so there are a lot of autoimmune diseases that can occur. I think the most common is something called Hashimoto's. And Hashimoto's is an autoimmune disease, meaning that your body starts to attack your own thyroid. And what you'll find is that people who have autoimmune diseases are likely to have multiple autoimmune diseases. So these then can lead on to other entities such as rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, multiple sclerosis, you name it, lupus. These are all kind of fairly common that people have heard. And what I'm seeing is that there's actually, a huge connection. And it is where I would say anybody who has an autoimmune disease, at least at this point, we've basically connected it to some type of trigger. And this trigger, in almost most cases, not to say it is always the food, but it is in most cases a food sensitivity alerting an immune response that then eventually starts to attack itself. And so now celiac or gluten hypersensitivity is probably one of the more common ones. Other foods that are very common are dairy, soy, peanuts. These are also very, very common amongst patients. And in fact, what happens is that when you have one food allergy. It is very typical for patients. And I think this is probably genetic to some degree at this point. But there are other food allergies. So once you're allergic to dairy, there's a high chance you might be allergic to gluten. So now to kind of hit the point even further, I wanted to, Alexandra, why don't you talk about your experience with gluten, and can you kind of share with us your experience and maybe help explain what this is all about and what gluten is?
So, yes. So I've always had stomach issues. And since, you know, you and I have been together, I've always talked about my stomach hurting, or I always felt bloated or gassy, or just not comfortable in my stomach. And I've gone through the gamut of tests to try to figure it out. I even was seen by a GI doctor. I've been scoped, and I was on a couple medications, but all day, to just try to make me a little bit comfortable. And it was about a year ago, or over a year ago, that we put the connection that I might have a food sensitivity, and it was probably to gluten. So now what I have learned a great deal is, like you mentioned in the beginning, there's that wide spectrum of gluten sensitivity, which is gluten is a protein found in wheat, barley, oats, and grains. And I learned that when I remove these food products from my diet, I instantly, I'm not even exaggerating, within a few days, my stomach felt a lot better. And I slowly started taking myself off of these medications now you completely took me off of the Prilosec and the Zantac. And it's amazing how healthier I feel, how comfortable I feel, and avoiding these gluten products. I also feel that in respect to associating it with how, you know, other ailments, I feel healthier. I feel like I haven't gotten sick. I haven't been ill with other, like flu, colds, any other problems since I've really identified this gluten sensitivity in my diet.
And so I wanted to kind of share with the audience that, you know, this is something that I think ever since we've been together since 1999-2000 that you've actually had. And this is not something that you're dying, and this is not something that, you know, you're seeing doctors all the time. This is something that you've dealt with. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really, I think, an important point, is that I think a lot of people don't realize that they have some issue with the gut, and they feel that this bloating, let's say, or occasional gas is a very innocent thing to have. And my point is that it's not as innocent as you think. And if you're having that, that's probably, and you have it more than just, let's say, once a week, let's say, then it's probably a concern. And it's something that needs to be, I think, looked at. Because ultimately, like I said, how your gut does will determine how your health does. And so, you know, as you were saying, you had it for years and years, and you took medications here and there, but overall, it seemed to get worse.
Actually, also, Dr. Tang, I was diagnosed, as like you said in the beginning, I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. So I always thought, oh, okay, I just have IBS. That's all, you know, it's just my IBS acting up. And, you know, go ahead.
Oh, well, what I was saying is, you know, and for a lot of patients, they just need some diagnosis. So mm-hmm. oftentimes they'll deal with this at home for years and years. And so they finally get to the point where they see the doctors. And then when they are given any type of labeling, and in this case, irritable bowel, they feel relieved. They say, okay, it's just irritable bowel. It's not something that I'm going to die. And mm-hmm. so it's not cancer. So they feel relieved. But then mm-hmm. again, they continue to live their life in a not a very fruitful way. And they have this. And, you know, obviously, the people who are really bothered end up going to see the doctors all the time. But there are people who have very subclinical underlying small symptoms. And that's the concern. This is the tens of millions of people who are not treated or diagnosed with any particular problem, but have something that needs to be addressed.
And I also wanted to mention that true, as you said in the beginning, when a patient goes in with a stomach issue, how most physicians will tell them to change their diet. Because myself, I like spicy food. I even try to avoid spicy food because I just couldn't figure out why I was always so uncomfortable. And now, I mean, now that I eliminate the gluten from my diet, I'm learning every single day, like what I could handle, what I can't handle. There are certain things I could eat that are maybe gluten and maybe not. And I can eat as spicy food as I could not have as I could handle and not even have a stomach issue about it.
And that's also a great point that you bring up too, is because, you know, people who have, let's say, a gut issue, a food sensitivity, their reaction is different. It is easy to understand the bloatiness and easy to understand stomach pain. That's something that people can relate to. But when it comes down to, let's say, heartburn, people think of heartburn as having too much acid production. So you're eating too spicy foods. In your case, what happened was the spicy foods seemed about a little bit, but when you actually took off the gluten entirely, you could eat spicy food. So it really tells you it wasn't the spicy food, it was actually the reaction that you get from the gluten sensitivity.
Absolutely.
Now, the other thing also is that what we've seen also is that there are many types of skin reactions, and this is something that I never put two and two together until recently, actually. And so now that I understand this more, what I'm seeing is that a lot of people who have, let's say, eczema, which is kind of a dry, scaling skin, acne, let's say, psoriasis, how about acne rosacea? These things I'm seeing that they're actually coming and stemming from the gut. And so when you actually start to really treat the gut, you'll actually see these things improve. Now, you know, acne, for instance, is not something that people will automatically assume that's from the gut. We all automatically think that's a hormone issue, and it could be related to hormone issues. But what I'm seeing is that as you get older, let's say if you're in your 30s and 40s and you never had acne, and all of a sudden you start to have acne all of a sudden, and you don't have oily skin, it's going to be food allergy until proven otherwise. And so, and if you actually looked and you basically, like for doctors, for instance, we have to really ask the questions. We have to really be specific, because when I ask questions, oh, how is your stomach doing? Everyone will say fine. I mean, there will be on a rare occasion people will actually say, oh, my stomach's bothering me and so forth. So those are the 10% of the people. 90% of people will say, oh, well, that's fine. Do you have bloating? Oh, yeah, I have bloating. Oh, do you have gas? Oh, yeah, I have gas. So it's such a normal daily thing that it gets blown over. And so people just don't think like there's any issues at all. So we're going to be running to a break right now, and so when we come back, we'll talk about what you can do about the gluten sensitivity and how you can actually treat your gut and how to improve your gut health. So stay tuned.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
The incidence of autism has increased at an alarming rate. Approximately 1 in 150 children are affected by autism, giving autism the undesired ranking as the most prevalent childhood developmental disorder in the U.S. 67 children will be diagnosed today. That is nearly one child every 20 minutes. Autism One, a conversation of hope, hosted by Terry Aranga, illuminates how right now there is more reason than ever for individuals with autism spectrum disorders and their families to have the best hope for the brightest future. Autism is treatable, and given appropriate therapies, children are recovering. With well-known researchers and doctors, members of Congress, and expert service providers from a wide range of disciplines, Terry offers interviews and insights highlighting the progress in areas related to autism spectrum disorders such as biomedical research and treatment, communication, education, and behavioral modalities, sociological and philosophical issues, and legislative advocacy and insurance concerns. Autism One, a conversation of hope, broadcasts each Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Autism One, a conversation of hope. Through education and conversation, there is hope.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to Health and Beauty for Life with Dr. Tang and Alexandra. If you have any questions or comments, please call into our program at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to John Tang at rejuvemedical.com. That's J-O-H-N Tang at R-E-J-U-V-E medical.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Welcome back. This is the Health and Beauty for Life show. You're listening to Dr. Tang and Alexandra. Remember, you can send us your emails as well. We'll be happy to entertain your questions. Our email again is John Tang, J-O-H-N-T-A-N-G at Rejuve, R-E-J-U-V-E medical.com. We're talking about gluten sensitivity, and I'm labeling this as non-celiac gluten hypersensitivity because this is a food sensitivity, a food allergy that has not yet caused the actual true celiac disease, which is gut atrophy. So, Alexandra, real quickly, before we have to talk about our other things, so what things are you able to eat and what things people should avoid?
So for me, I really think it's individual, as you keep mentioning in your on our show today. I really do believe that it's individual, and I feel like everyone will have more of a reaction than others. And for myself, I've just really have eliminated rice. I can't eat brown rice, pastas, white flour breads. And by eliminating those foods, I've really have, my stomach feels amazing. I can't even tell you that when I see, like, I was a big fan of lasagna, and I feel so good. My stomach feels so good that when I look at a piece of lasagna, I have no desire to have it because I can't even imagine how that would make my stomach feel. Where in the past, I would be all over that piece of lasagna because that's one of my favorite foods. And just avoiding these foods have made me feel so good that I have no desire to have them anymore.
Yes. So basically, anything that has flour, really, it should be avoided. So anything that's baked with flour, obviously. Now, there are substitutes that you can use that don't have gluten in them. I think some soy flour I've seen that can be used. The other thing is for people who are very allergic to gluten, they can't have any type of corn or anything that is fed corn. So in the severe cases, any animals that are fed corn, cattle, so it has to be grass-fed cattle, or chicken, range-free chickens, because sometimes these chickens are fed corn. And so when they have the corn, when you eat that type of meat, you will actually have a reaction too. So it really depends. And so, like I said, there is a spectrum of gluten sensitivity people, and you might be allergic to one of the types of barley or rye or wheat or all three or all four. So you just have to, in a way, sometimes learn what you can and cannot eat. But you really have to be paying attention to whether your stomach reacts or not. Don't blow it off because it is something you can't blow off.
Mm-hmm. I did want to share one more bit of information with the listeners because it was very enlightening for myself. And I didn't understand why I could have rice from, like, if I made long grain rice at home, how that didn't bother me. But if I had like the Asian style rice or something, that really upset my stomach. And it was brought to my attention that, you know, rice for storage is prepared a certain way. And a lot of times they use flour, white flour, for the rice not to stick to each other. And so if you're going to eat rice that has flour, then of course that's going to irritate, like for myself, that's very, makes my stomach uncomfortable. But if I have, you can see rice that's packaged and says gluten free, and it doesn't make sense. Well, what do you mean by gluten free rice? Well, I think that it's based on the preparation of, you know, it's just the grain rice. It's nothing is mixed with it, so it doesn't stick together like the white flour.
Yeah, that's a huge point, and that is something. Also, other things that we've learned also, for instance, is let's say the soy sauce. Soy sauce is made from wheat. And so now we have what was the thing you bought? It was
it's gluten-free soy sauce.
Gluten-free soy sauce. Yeah. go figure that has gluten in there as well. And so you really start to really figure out now some of the grains that you can have. By the way, is how do you pronounce it? Quinoa.
Quinoa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something you can have. You can also have potatoes. And that's homegrown, not homegrown, but something you prepare yourself. It can't be frozen because oftentimes they put kind of a flour to so that they don't stick. So it has to be cooked yourself, for instance. So that type of starch you can have. So, you know, we're actually running short in time. So I'm going to quickly talk about my list of the 10 ways you can improve your gut health. I think we're going to have another show on this because the time went by so quickly. So I'm going to just kind of briefly just mention it, and we'll have to explain it. I'll have to explain it in better detail. So if you're ready, we're going to talk about one is obviously avoid the food allergies. So if you have any particular food allergies, you should be very careful and try to really learn. Take a food diary. So things, like I said, that are very problematic for a lot of people is dairy. Gluten, soy, and nuts. Those are big ones. Second thing is avoid any type of processed foods, refined sugars. And what I mean by that is refined sugars is anything that has high fructose corn syrup, for instance. Anything that's processed would be anything that's found in a box or in the bag. These are not recommended. Obviously, to try to increase your water intake. The fourth thing is having enough fiber in your diet. So there are two types of fibers, insoluble and soluble fibers, both of which are pretty important. Too much to go into detail about what the difference is, but I recommend about 30 to 35 grams. And in order to get this, obviously, you would eat lots of fruits and vegetables that are fresh and hopefully uncooked and organic. Now, if you can't get this, there are many different preparations where you can actually have more fiber, whether it's a drink or a capsule. So those are other ways of gaining fiber. Digestive enzymes to help digest your food prior for you eating. I also recommend a very good probiotic, a type of probiotic that has a multi-colony counts, different type of strains, many type of strains. That's very, very important to reestablish the gut flora. Other things, fish oil / krill oil. This is to help provide nutrients to the gut cells to give them more nutritional support, but also for any type of inflammation. There are some other supplements that we have at our office that I highly recommend for people who have gut problems. One's called GI Cell Support, and basically it is a vitamin that has many different nutrients, of which glutamine, marshmallow, berberine, cabbage leaves, slippery elm, and isoglucosamine are all important nutrients to help nourish the gut cells to improve the gut barrier so that the gut can actually absorb the nutrients in a better fashion. And one other product, which we won't have time at all to talk about, we'll have to talk about next time, is something called aloe arborescens, which is a specialized aloe plant that is very anti-inflammatory, medicinal in its use. And I love this product. This is definitely a product we use all the time. So we'll have to talk about this in greater detail. So we're almost wrapping up. So we're going to be next week, we're having a guest come onto our show. This is going to be a very interesting topic. This is a topic that I think everyone should listen to, because everyone that we talk to takes vitamins. And the idea is, how do you know which vitamins are good or bad? How to read the label, and how for yourself make that distinction of what to buy and what not to buy. So we're going to have a guest speaker next week to join us to talk about that. And afterwards, we'll have to talk about some of these products in greater detail. So thank you once again for joining us. We'd love to have you. We'd love to hear from you as well. So please stay tuned for next week, next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Remember what I always say, go out and live your life. Don't let life leave you.
Thanks again for joining us this week. Health and Beauty for Life is heard live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Live younger this week. It's a beautiful-